How are you? I am glad. I am so excited. I have to tell you that we are talking about mental health. We don't always talk a lot about mental health. I'm just trying to get my iPad moving. We don't always talk about mental health, but I'm so glad that you all are doing that. I just want to thank you, pastors, for inviting me. I think sometimes when we think about mental health, we have kind of an idea in our head. We have an idea in our mind of what it looks like, what it is, and how it shows up. And I have to say, I am, it doesn't show up quite like we had imagined. And I'll tell you a little bit about my journey. I'm a walker, so I might move around. Is that all right? Okay, y'all can still hear me? Okay. All right, so I'm a walker. I think I do most of my best thinking while walking. All right, so I actually found out about mental health an odd kind of way. I grew up here in Silicon Valley. I attended Milpitas High School. If y'all are familiar with Milpitas High School, go Trojans, thank you very much. Okay, I had this vision. My parents were pretty determined. They were pretty focused, so we all knew we were going to school. You all probably don't have that pressure. We did growing up, and we started with this knowing that you were going to college. How many of you are parents in here? Okay, grandparents, right? So we kind of have a vision of our children, right? We just kind of know that they're going to follow a certain path. That's kind of our desire. And so my parents' desire was that we would go to school. So when we talked to our friends, it wasn't like, are you going to college? It was really like, what college are you going to? And when I saw these young people graduating and going on to college, I thought, oh, I was there. That was amazing. And I got into college, and life was going well, and I started working at a company called Siemens. Anybody ever heard of Siemens? Okay. All right. Siemens in the house. So I had I was working at Siemens in public relations and communications, and I thought, I am on it. God knew exactly what he was doing. I thought I had a relationship with God. I really did. I was like, I go to church. I sit. I pray, especially when I need something. I'm like, dear Jesus, if I can get this promotion, I'm not kidding, I will go to church every day. I'm not going to talk to anybody. Right? Then I get to, and I thought, okay, this is good. I have a really good relationship with God. This is amazing. And then I got a call one day, and it was a judge. The judge was like, do you know this person? They said they're your cousin. They want to come live with you. And I said, ah, do you mean like live or like visit live? And they said, well, come for the weekend. So my cousin came for the weekend, her mother and I, her birth mother and I, and first cousins, and she was six. And I thought, this is going to be amazing. We could bake cookies. We could do all kinds of things. I'm going to take her to sushi. This is going to be fantastic. But those of you who are parents, raise your hands again. Yeah. So you realize that if you don't start children on sushi, they really aren't interested in sushi. I just didn't know that at the time until she was crying trying to ask for a hamburger. And I was like, what? But this is sushi. And so one weekend turned into two weekends, which turned into 2 months. So I called the social worker back, and I was like, hey, she's still here in case y'all have a really tough caseload. I just want to let you know we're having a good time, but she's still here. And she had an imaginary friend, which I have to tell you, I was young, I was in college and working, and she had an imaginary friend, and I was like, that's helpful, right? Because she can play with her friends while I had work to do. Well, when she got into about middle school, her friend was still with her. And again, still helpful. You know, I thought, I know people were like, Dawn, that doesn't seem right. And I was like, it is quite helpful. I just want to let you know, because she seems to be somewhat occupied when I'm not there. And then she got a diagnosis like an ADHD. I was like, all right, that's not the worst that can happen. And I come from a community, we're from the South. How many people from the South in here? All right, so in the South, we do things just a little differently. You know, my parents were like, there is nothing wrong with her. She just needs to focus. And I was like, I know, but they said she has ADHD. They said she doesn't have ADHD. What she needs is discipline. That's what she has. She has, I need discipline. That's what they call it ADHD, but it's really just discipline. So I prayed again because I knew God and I were really getting to be good friends. Dear Jesus,
If she doesn't have ADHD, be careful what you pray for. If she doesn't have ADHD, show me what she has. And so within a couple years, I realized she didn't have maybe as deep of ADHD as we had originally thought. She had actually bipolar disorder. And I thought, okay, bipolar, not a big deal. I told her, listen, you have bipolar, I have asthma, we each have something, it's not a big deal at all. So this is what we're gonna do. I gave her a litany of books. I was like, so I made this little list for you, because I'm still thinking, right, I'm still back at home where everybody's going to college, and this is how you approach things. So I gave her this little book list. She was in the hospital. She was in a behavioral health unit. I said, so this is your reading list. This is my reading list. And in 3 months, we're going to come together and convene and have a plan of approach. She was out of school at the time. She wasn't doing that well. And she did. She was like, all right, Mom, I'm going to read my books. I said, that's good. I'm reading my books. Every time I visit, how's it going? What chapter are you on? Did you learn a little bit about bipolar? What'd you learn? Okay, that's good. Now, we have 90 days. And in 90 days, you're going back to school, and I'm going to be focused on work. We can bring your friend back. It's going to be amazing. And she transferred from one hospital to another. And I happened to be standing in line to visit her, and there was a gentleman who was in front of me visiting his father. And he chuckled. He said, ha, 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 every time I come here, you all do the same thing. Is you always put my dad, you send me to the youth unit. My dad's 88 years old with bipolar. And I remember, I was like, did he just say 88? Like, this isn't a three-month plan? Like, my daughter was like, you know, she's 15. He must have heard me gasp because he turned around. And I said, so my daughter was just diagnosed. He's like, yeah. Yeah, we've been going through this for my whole life. Yeah, my dad is bipolar as well. He's 88. I was like, really? He said, oh, yeah, get used to it. It's a lifetime journey. I was like, what? No, really? Are you sure? So then I was like, I wasn't doing this right. Hold on. All right. Dear Jesus. All right. I know I was before, I was doing it in a chair and standing up and when I first woke up, but I heard if you get down on your knees, it might be a little better, so let me just try it this way, right? So some of you all may not know, but some of us feel like if there's a way to get to Jesus quicker, we just might have to do it that way. So I was getting on my, I even got a prayer pillow, and I was like, so I'm gonna just try this approach. Well, what I realized in my journey is I got referred to NAMI. And I was like, NAMI? What is NAMI? How many people have heard of NAMI? Okay. Well, those of you who haven't heard of NAMI, let me tell you, NAMI is like the party you want to get invited to. It's like, you know, the dinner party that you think, oh, I need to be sitting at that table. And my daughter had been, she's been what we called rapid cycling. So she had been in the hospital quite a bit. Probably about 14 times by the time I reached NAMI. So that's kind of a lot. And we didn't talk about it a lot because of stigma, right? I remember going to my pastor. I said, you know, she has this thing, Pastor. And he said, Don, listen. And he gave me a little vial of oil. He's like, we've blessed it. You just go ahead and when she sleeps, you go ahead and lay it on her. And I did. She slept and I'd be like, you know, she'd wake up and she's like, it's so weird. It's like oil's on my head. I was like, what? What happened? I put on the doorknob. I lay it on the bed. You know, she almost slipped all out of the bed. And I was like, you know, I came back, Pastor, I did it. I mean, she's practically bathing in the holy oil. I'm dipping it in her water. And when she steps outside, she comes back in to take a bath. But I don't think that's working. He was like, you got to pray harder. I was like, well, you know, I moved the pillow. I was like, maybe it's the pillow. So I moved the pillow. And what I realized is it isn't that, right? God just makes us all uniquely different. And I think my journey to healing and my relationship with God changed significantly. Because initially, I kind of had a cool relationship with God, kind of like with parents or grandparents, where you're like, I know I shouldn't be eating cookies, but I'm spending the night at my grandmother's house, and I'm like, boy, it would be great to have cookies. And they're like, oh, do they want cookies? And then cookies appear. Right? And you kind of have that relationship with God, like, you know, I kind of want this, and if I work hard and pray well and do and treat people nice, this will happen. But that's, you know, the relationship with God is what's different. So I was kind of stuck in the religion, and then I developed the relationship, you know, and I heard somebody say religion is like quantity and the relationship with God is like the quality of the relationship. So I started moving into the quality of the relationship because I realized that you really can't walk this journey by yourself. You really can't understand a lot about mental health until you understand just the enormity of how normal it is. Mental health is physical health. 1 in 5 people has a diagnosable mental health challenge every year. 1 in 5. So if you just counted off 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and every 5th person stood up, that would be the number of people just in this room. And we don't think about that, right? Because we always show up and we kind of show up, you know, all put together. You know, we put our wigs on and we put our hair together and we put on the great clothes. And we mask oftentimes our journeys internally, right? If we're struggling or if we're sad or if we're unhappy. So my journey with my daughter was the same. Is that I didn't want people to know she had bipolar disorder initially because people were very judgmental. You know, and the pastor was telling me I didn't put enough oil and I'm trying to get more oil. I mean, I had a big old container and it just wasn't working. And so what I realized is that it doesn't really, the oil itself and prayer works. Prayer really, really works. But when you're talking about mental health and mental illness, we need another plan, right? We need to come together with compassion and empathy. And so I realize, and my daughter always tells me this too, is that we have to work together and get educated together. Because the reality is people don't, we all have mental health. People, they understand that, you know, we all are dealing with our mental health. And it impacts how we show up every day, right? You ask somebody at work how they're doing, and they might be grumpy, and you're like, oh, they just didn't have coffee. Right? Or people come home a little anxious, because we all get anxious. We have a presentation and we're anxious. We buy a new house and we're anxious. We lose a loved one and we're anxious or depressed. And so we kind of go through the stages that show up under the guise of mental health or mental illness anyway. It's just a normal thing. We hear voices, right? But usually the voice is like, Dawn, you know that's wrong. You know that that is $2.99. And don't try to go up there pretending like that is like 99 cents. I think the tag fell off, right? We do that everywhere we go. We kind of like people give us the wrong change, and we hear, that's wrong. But we take it anyway like, thank you, Jesus. That must have been a gift today that I needed to get coffee. But I will pay it forward. I promise I'm going to pay it forward the next time I get extra change. We do that. But the challenge is that when those voices impact our daily lives, when the sadness doesn't go away, when we realize that we're anxious just because we're anxious, like we can't figure it out. And it's impacting how we interact with our spouses, our children, our friends. And I think the biggest thing that I realize is that 300 million people globally are impacted by depression. How many people knew that? 300 million. That's a lot of people, right? And that's a lot of people who put their gel in their hair and put the lipstick on. We got our eyelashes just right, right? We get our matching bags. I mean, that's a lot of people who show up acting like we have it all together. And we come just like God did. We sit in the church and we kind of wave nicely at people. Look at them. God bless you. But we never really say, how are you, right? Or let me tell you how I'm doing, because I'm not doing so great today, right? I'm not doing so well. And I think that when I first start talking about mental health, I was so naive. I didn't realize that, you know, we all had mental health. I thought, you know, just, I don't know what I had a very different perspective. And when I started understanding that mental illness is not just one thing, it's genetics, it's environmental, it's our lifestyle. It impacts us. And we are accepting depending upon what it is. So we'll accept PTSD often from a veteran. We don't always accept it from somebody who hasn't shared that they might have been in a domestic violence situation, or they come from a neighborhood where there's excessive gunfire. If they don't tell us, we kind of judge sometimes. We kind of, you know, assume that it is something that it's not. And it impacts so much of our daily activities. So I want to share just a couple types of mental illnesses you all probably are familiar with. Major depression, raise your hand if you've heard of that. Okay. Schizophrenia. All right. Bipolar disorder. OCD. Anxiety or panic disorder. PTSD. Borderline personality disorder. Okay, now I'm going to ask y'all to do something that maybe other people haven't asked you to do. Raise your hand if you're touched by any one of those things, either personally, like you know somebody who, okay, thank you for your courage, right? Because we're all, if we tell the truth, we're all touched. We're all touched. 1 in 5 adults, 1 in 7 children experience a mental health challenge. And I think that, you know, at its worst, mental illness can lead to a lot of different things. Impulsivity, poor lifestyle choices, and in some cases, even suicide. But mental illness is treatable. Suicide is 100% preventable. And the challenge that we face right now is that when we start looking at like statistics around even suicide, it's that it's up 22% in every age category. In every age category. That means 9 to 12-year-olds, the rate of suicide is increasing. We have to have some conversations because they don't always have the language to say, hey, listen, I'm being bullied. This isn't right. Somebody said I'm too fat on social media. My boyfriend broke up with me. My girlfriend doesn't like me. The teacher's mean, right? We hear that and we're like, you're not there to make friends. Your job is there to learn. They don't have to like you. But it's impacting them. And children who are bullied are 9 times as likely to consider suicide. 9 times. So what do we do? Because I think sometimes the challenge is that there isn't much that can be done. And I think there's so much that can be done. And NAMI starts that conversation for many of us. I'm going to grab the water if you don't mind. I think one of the things that NAMI does, for those of you, raise your hand who's heard of NAMI. NAMI offers education classes. And what they do is they provide the opportunity to come in and sit alongside other family members and learn a lot about the signs and symptoms, the medications, the strategies, the tools, the tips, the tricks that help us as loved ones navigate the journey with our family members. They also have classes for individuals who are currently struggling. And they provide them also with resources with individuals who themselves are managing their illnesses. And they have peer pal programs. So they have like mentoring programs where people who have a lived experience can get together with somebody else who does. And they also have what's called a mentors on discharge program. And that's when individuals have a severe mental health challenge and they might be inpatient and they would be partnered with somebody who would come and visit them. And sometimes that's really helpful, especially for them. So as we think about what types of things, you know, as we talk about mental illness, I really challenge us to think, when do we need to reach out? Because sometimes we're doing a lot, right? We're managing our households, we're trying to work, we're trying to make it happen in Silicon Valley. We push, we fight, we're trying to just get to the next level. But I just want to offer this up, and that is, if you're noticing dramatic changes in your eating or sleeping habits, if you have excessive fears or worries or anxieties, confused thinking, distorted thinking, if you have prolonged sadness or irritability, oftentimes depression masks as irritability. It doesn't just mask as sadness. So we kind of think sometimes that people who are depressed are just sad, but sometimes they show up as irritable. It actually impacts sometimes diagnosis of Alzheimer's and dementia because that also masks as irritability. And so we kind of get a little confused. If there's social withdrawal or feelings of anger, if you're hearing voices or having suicidal thoughts, or if you find yourself being drawn to vices that allow you to self-medicate, drugs or alcohol, shopping, because sometimes, you know, we may not call it what it is, but if we're solving our problems with retail therapy, we might just want to get that looked at. That's all. Just get it looked at. But I just want to just kind of look at just the impact that mental health can have and what we can do about it from a spiritual perspective, because studies have shown that when there is a convergence, a marriage between spirituality and mental health, treatment is far more successful. When we as family members can understand that oftentimes mental health and mental health challenges with our loved ones seem like the end. They seem just hard, and it seems like we're walking in cement shoes. But I believe that God really has an opportunity to give us the journey to be able to make a difference. And sometimes that's what we ask, right? How can I have an impact in this world? And then something allows us to share our journey, because nothing is wasted with God. Not one experience. He uses everything. And he renews us. And he allows us to be able to come forth and to be able to share what we've learned with others to help the journey. So I just want to encourage you during Mental Health Awareness Month, as you all are courageously taking this initiative on, it is imperative, I believe, for our families, for our loved ones, for our communities, for our children, because our children's voices are really not being heard from a mental health perspective in a way that empowers them and tells them that, yes, they might have a mental illness, but it is more of a blessing than a curse. Sometimes people think it's a curse, and it's not. You know, they get to walk through the world. I always tell that to my daughter. My daughter says, whenever you talk about mental illness, make sure you let them know that it's okay. We get to see people differently. We get to notice things that other people don't notice, that we have a different. I always tell her, you know, I think your vibration might be a little unusual today, because I always tell her she walks with a different vibration. She can spot things that I don't necessarily see in people. And that's a gift. That's a gift God gave her. And that's a gift God gives each of us, the opportunity to truly start fresh, to truly understand that whether you're in the midst of a challenge, speak up and speak out. You have a great group of pastors. Share with somebody. If you forgot to take your medication last night, okay, start fresh. Take it today. If you kind of found yourself or somebody comes at you in ways that cause you to, you know, question them and who they are and your safety and theirs, have a conversation about it. But definitely, definitely talk about it. Because God has made us in this way to be able to offer humanity to each other. And I just want to just thank y'all for the opportunity to speak today. And I pray for you and all of us, because I think the more people that we can bring in and embrace, the more that we can change the way that we engage with one another. I have to say that the first pastor that I spoke with who gave me the oil and a book on demon possessions, I don't even go there anymore. And that's unfortunate, right? Because I left the church, not that church. I mean, I'm in another church home, but I left that church home, and all my gifts and talents and resources came with me. So if we don't embrace each other, we actually lose the opportunity to lift people up and to share how good God is, because we are that reflection. So I just want to offer that up. I thank you just for this opportunity. I thank you for the opportunity. I ask that you continue to educate yourself, but y'all are in such a great place. So thank you so much for the opportunity. God bless you all. Yeah.